I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, President Trump has signed an executive order in regards to election integrity, but will it do anything? Plus, female athletes in Washington State get a long-awaited meeting with the superintendent of public instruction on the issue of boys and girls sports. And Governor Bob Ferguson admitting, as he signs it, that he has reservations about the new law that could allow an unelected board of bureaucrats to oust elected sheriffs. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. There was something brewing before the show today that we were working on, and actually it's something we've been working on now for a couple months. We, of course, have been very involved in the fight to protect girls' sports in Washington State. I'm very supportive of the initiative that would do just that, but I think the most powerful voices in this debate are the female athletes themselves, and two of them in particular have done just about everything that we and others have asked of them as it pertains to speaking out publicly, Annalee Wilson and Frances Stout. I mean, they're the reason I'm so passionate about this issue. Frances, in her case, you know, she ended up walking off the basketball court during her final game of the year a couple years ago because a biological boy was on the other team. She became very outspoken after that. She's a Tumwater, a student in Tumwater. And then Annalee Wilson is a student in Wenatchee, and she has lost races to a biological boy. She lost the equivalent. She was in junior high at the time, the equivalent of state to a biological boy. Didn't realize it until they were standing on the podium and people were just confused as to what happened. And so both of them have become very important voices in this debate, not only locally, but nationally as well, and behind the scenes and also publicly. They have called for elected leaders to meet with them. They've called for the governor to meet with them, the attorney general to meet with them, the superintendent to public instruction to meet with them. And you might recall, gosh, it was probably 2 months ago or something, that Carlene Johnson with the Center Square was in an interview with Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Reichdahl. And she put him on the spot and said, "Will you meet with these girls?" And he said, yes. And so he made good on that promise this morning. So this morning around 10 a.m., Frances, Annalee, and their families went into a meeting with Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Reichdahl, as well as, our understanding, is his chief of staff and an attorney, which is, you know, basically an attorney for the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, but also the head of he's like their civil rights officer. So these girls, 16 years old, went into a meeting with these government bureaucrats and the head of our public school system and reiterated. And again, this comes after a lot of calls. I mean, Frances Stout has been on with us several times, urging the superintendent to sit down with her.
I want to have a face-to-face conversation with them and have them call me a liar to my face. I want to see that happen, because if they feel very comfortable doing it over to the press and over screen. So I'd like to see what they have to say to me and listen to my story and listen to other girls' stories and still tell me that it isn't happening.
Yeah, and I think the big thing for Annalee has been, you know, whenever she hears these elected leaders speaking, they always talk about the trans kids, protecting them, and they never talk about protecting girls.
You have stood up for transgender athletes, but you have not stood up for us. We matter too. We have voices and we have stories, and we deserve protection in our locker rooms, in our sports, and in the opportunities that we have worked so hard for.
Yeah, they have voices, they have stories, and this morning they got to sit in a room with Chris Reichdahl and tell those stories. As soon as they got out, we jumped on a Zoom to talk to us in time for the show today. So we spoke with Frances and Annalee about how the meeting went. Frances, Annalee, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I know this is a long-awaited day. Let's start with you, Frances. How do you think it went?
I think it went good for us. I think that we were able to hear his true intentions behind certain things that he's been saying publicly. We weren't given great answers by him. And I think that we were going to him with our concerns and our feelings over things and the truth. And we were responded with just, he was finding ways out of every sort of situation.
Yeah. Annalie, how do you feel it went?
Like Francis, I definitely think that it went well for us. He was able to hear us, and I think definitely a few times he definitely, I definitely think he probably agreed with what we were saying. He just couldn't say anything, but I think there were a few times that he was like, oh, I think they're right. So he couldn't say anything, but he just kept going back to, well, I can't do anything because state law. I can't do anything because state law. That was kind of his way out of everything. But there were a few times that we asked him some questions and he was a little bit stumped. I think he didn't really know what to say.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, Annalie, you've said over and over is, you know, what about us? You've stood up for the transgender athletes, but you haven't stood up for us. Did you feel like he at least that you got a chance really to be heard in a way where he finally like heard your struggle and your side?
There was one point where I was talking about how this isn't working for the transgender athletes or us or just anyone in general. And I think at that point I got a little bit emotional. I think you could definitely tell that me and Francis are extremely passionate about this and that it's not just us in this struggle. It's a lot of other women and girls across Washington. And I think in that moment, he definitely felt my struggle. Like, I think he could tell that this is an issue. But again, he couldn't really say anything and he didn't say anything. So.
Yeah. Francis, you've had some pretty harsh words for Chris Reichdahl publicly at many different events. When you walked in, did you feel like he knew that he'd heard those things? Did you feel any sort of tension or animosity?
Yes. So I'll just say right now, too, my feelings towards him have not changed. Actually, they've probably, you know, it just kind of makes me know that I'm right in what I've said, because based off of what he's told us today, my feelings are strong. And he admitted that he's heard, but he's also, I think, pretty uneducated in what he's claiming to be saying and telling us with the facts. A thing that I brought up was in a interview, he claimed that I used derogatory language. When I asked him about it, he said it's something he read in the newspaper. So I think that my feelings are still strong about him, and I think that he needs to read up on certain things that he's saying about people. I think that you know, it's pretty disappointing that is who our state superintendent is and that he's doing absolutely nothing to support us girls, but, you know, rather the transgender athletes.
Did he bring up he brings up a lot this issue of like, God, what is the phrase for it? Intersex. That's his sort of excuse. Did the intersex issue come up in the meeting?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Annalie.
He did bring that up. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
He did, like Francis was going to say, he did bring that up at one point, but we kind of shut him down because, again, it doesn't really have anything to do with our current situation. We're not talking about that. Obviously, there are people who have, are intersex or whatever, but that was not what we were talking about. So we kind of shut him down with that. But he did try to bring it up at one point.
He was turning everything into, well, I'm following the state, what the state is saying in the state law. And I think that it's important to know that you can still be supportive of the female athletes and say, I'm going to do everything in my power to support you and make sure that you guys feel safe in your locker rooms and in your bathrooms and playing on your sports teams. He's not doing that. And so when he's saying, I'm following state law, you're not supporting. He brought up 1.1 million children that he's trying to support. Mm-hmm. And he said, with the woman, the biological woman, biological men, transgender individuals and intersex individuals. And I told him, I said, part of that 1.1 population of children that you're supporting, you're not supporting them because part of that is the female athletes. And he's doing absolutely nothing to hear us and to hear what we have to say. I told him that you can still be supportive of all children. You can have a third category. You can have a place. But you can still be supportive of the girls and the female athletes who are uncomfortable with having men in our space. So
yeah.
he did not have anything that he said that made me feel like, wow, he really is understanding of what we're at, because he's doing everything in his power to not support us.
Did you guys feel, and I'll end here, did you feel like there's any takeaway where he promised to do anything or think about anything moving forward. Francis, you want to start?
So as I previously mentioned with the interview using derogatory language that he said that I used, I asked for a public apology because as a 15-year-old girl at the time, me saying you're a man is not derogatory language because this individual admitted to being a man on an interview with you. And so that was not in any way, that didn't deserve me to be investigated for harassment and bullying. That was not derogatory language. And so him saying that publicly on public record and filed that I used derogatory language, I asked for an apology. And he said that he will think about it and that it would cause more issues for him and me. And that is a risk I'm willing to take, because to have the state superintendent say that I used derogatory language, that deserves an apology because I did not. And so I deserve what I asked for. And I think that he should truly, if he's saying he's going to think about it, I doubt that it would happen because he said that it would create more issues for him. And I don't think apologizing for saying an untrue statement. And I think that he should read up on things a little bit more if he's going to make assumptions and make claims on public record that about things. I think he needs to do some more research.
Yeah, and that's silly to say, oh, I'm protecting you, Francis, by not apologizing for having accused you of making derogatory statements. Mm-hmm. It's nuts. Annalee, we'll give you the last word. I mean, is there anything we can take out of this meeting that is productive or maybe could change things moving forward?
I'm not totally sure. You have something?
Do you want me?
Yeah, you can go ahead and know.
Okay.
I think that we should know that when it comes to November, when we do vote, that although we do not have a superintendent that is supporting us girls, we still can make a difference. And that he said that he's going to remain or refrain from making further comments on certain things until it gets to whatever the outcome is. Oh. And I think that is pretty crazy that he can't just take a stand and say, I'm supporting these girls. And so I think the positive outcome is that we still have the ability to make an impact and make a change. And I know you brought many letters to him and you can.
Yeah. So I brought a bunch of letters from girls all over Washington State, parents, fathers. We have another packet. All of these,
great.
I gave a packet like this to him. And, I gave them to him, telling him that these are letters from concerned people, people who have been told that they're going to get punished for standing up and just for speaking out. And at the very end of the meeting, I told him, like, just please read a few. Just read a few. Don't just throw them away. I'm like, I want you to read a few because these are messages from people who care deeply about this issue and are concerned for their daughters, concerned for their, I don't know, whatever, wives, whatever it is, concerned for themselves. And I was like, please just read a few. Like, I was really just like, please. So we'll see if he does. I don't know if he will. But he's like, I like to read. I'm like, well, perfect. There's a lot of letters.
Well, I love that. I love that you were able to do that. And I'm so proud of you guys. And you know that. And you don't need me to be proud of you. But that's a tough thing to do, to walk into a meeting like that could turn very hostile. And I'm so glad that it happened, even if it doesn't change his mind. So thank you very much. And the fight continues.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate it.
I love those girls. Man, I love those girls. I am so proud of them. And the strength it takes to do what they've been doing as teenagers and put themselves out there despite all the hate and the vitriol. And yeah, I mean, again, we've been trying to help them arrange this meeting for a couple months, giving them some advice. You know, I talked to their parents last night and said, you know, bring a notepad, because the parents wanted me or someone else to come with as sort of a third party. And I said, you know, I don't think it's a good idea. I think that if I were there, Chris Reichdahl would be very on edge and hostile, or they might even cancel the meeting. I said, just go in good faith and have the girls tell their stories, you know, no recording, no video, nothing like that. And at least try to change hearts and minds. And I can't imagine a grown man like him with kids sitting across from those two girls, and as Annalee said, you know, her getting emotional, as we've seen her get emotional before, I just can't imagine him not in his heart realizing that he's in the wrong, that he's doing the wrong thing, And to chalk it up to, as he told them, oh, it's the state is doing this. No, you're the head of the superintendent, you're the superintendent of public instruction, head of our public school system. You have a very important voice in this debate, and you could be using it to do the right thing, and you're choosing not to. Now, one bit of news I think comes out of that Francis said there is he said that he wouldn't essentially get involved moving forward until after voters have spoken. Now, she was disappointed by that because she wants him to advocate for protecting girls' sports, but I think that's a win. If he's really telling them that he'll remain neutral until after voters decide on the initiative, I think that's a win, because the flip side would be him not remaining neutral and continuing to spew some of the lies that he spewed about this issue in the media. So I hope that he does remain neutral. I think that would be the very best thing. So I'm glad that that meeting happened. Now I hope the governor will take a meeting with them, because he talks about his own daughter and her sports so much. And I hope the attorney general will take a meeting with them as well. And I'm glad Annalee was able to deliver some light reading for the head of our public school system, letters from other girls and parents who have been impacted by this issue. So we will continue to follow this, and it's going to be a big fight ahead until November. All right, coming up next, President Trump issuing an executive order related to mail-in balloting. Of course, we vote by mail in Washington state, so we'll see what it does. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, or really, if you're involved in the housing conversation at all, builders, developers, RHA is a great organization to get involved with. They are Washington's trusted resource in empowering housing providers, and they do that in a couple ways. At an individual level, making sure that if you have an issue as a landlord or a housing provider, they can help you navigate it, navigate the rules, regulations, constantly changing laws. And then they're your best advocate down in Olympia, trying to push good housing policy and stop bad housing policy. And they've got events all across the state happening all year round. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. Okay, I've had it about up to here with President Trump's executive orders. I've loved so many of them. You know, I was thinking the other day, what happened with his executive order on straws? Have we banned you can't ban straws, but you can have policies providing
right,
an option.
I'm sure that the government buildings probably don't have paper straws.
Yes, because I'll tell you what, I was at a bar in Las Vegas and I got one of those stupid paper straws. I almost packed my bags and left. So suffice it to say, President Trump's executive orders sound nice, but sometimes I'm like, okay, what did that do? And then what? And there's so many of those. So I like what I'm reading, but I need to see some sort of impact from these executive orders. So this is the one he put out today, an executive order ensuring citizenship verification and integrity in federal elections. First, let me say that it's very complex, some of the rules that he's putting out in this executive order. So I need to see how this will actually be implemented. But he said that this executive order is based on the constitutional obligation to guarantee a republic form of government to every state in the union. So that's what he's saying this executive order is in pursuit of. So the biggest part of this, and I think the hardest part to sort of figure out, is the federal government is going to compile lists and deliver lists to every state of citizens who will be the age of 18 and lawfully able to vote in a given state during a federal election, okay? Follow me here, because again, who's going to do this? How does this exactly work? So it says that the Secretary of Homeland Security, through the Director of the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, shall take and in coordination with the Social Security Administration, shall take appropriate action to compile and transmit to the chief election official of each state a list of individuals confirmed to be United States citizens who will be above the age of 18 at the time of an upcoming federal election and who maintain a residence in the state. So the federal government, with all those agencies, is going to compile a list of people who are over the age of 18 living in that state and lawful citizens to the head of the election system in any given state, and will do it within 60 days of an election in that state. So no fewer than 60 days before each regularly scheduled federal election. So, okay, well, what is the state elections official going to do? I mean, what they should do is, let's say you can get a comprehensive list from the federal government, which you should be able to do through the Social Security Administration, like they said, and now you've sent it to the Secretary of State in Washington more than 60 days before an election. Well, you should be able to say, hey, let's use that list to compare it to the list of voters we have. Let's see if there's anybody on our list that shouldn't be on our list. So if they wanted to utilize it to prevent voter fraud, they could. The question is, are they going to have to? There was nothing in this executive order that said if there's a punishment for, like, if you send them the list and they do nothing with it, well, I mean, there's no punishment for that. So that's where I'm like, what are the teeth here? This other one is interesting. And I don't know how this is going to work in practice. So the executive order sets a standard for mail-in ballot transmission and the appearance of those ballots. So it basically says if you're using the United States Postal Service for mail-in balloting, all the states have to handle those ballots in the same way, and the ballots have to meet some specific set standards for how they look, having a barcode on them, essentially, that's trackable. So that part is like, okay, I imagine most of these states would meet the requirements that they're setting forth in this executive order. But it says proposed provisions specify that no fewer than 90 days prior to a federal election, any state may choose to notify the United States Postal Service if it intends to allow for mail-in or absentee ballots to be transmitted by USPS. As part of that notification, any notifying state should further indicate whether it intends to submit to the United States Postal Service a list of voters eligible to vote in the federal election in that state to whom the state intends to provide a mail-in or absentee ballot. So follow me here, because again, this is confusing, but I want you to understand what the federal government is asking of the states. So it says the states need to notify USPS if they plan to use USPS to transmit ballots. So our state obviously would be one of those, so it'd have to notify. And then it says that when they do that, they also have to submit to USPS a list of eligible voters from the state, okay? And then it says specifically, USPS shall not transmit mail-in or absentee ballots from any individual unless they're on that list. You following me here? So Washington State, let's just say that this all goes into effect. Steve Hobbs, Secretary of State, would have to notify USPS, hey, we're going to use your services in the upcoming election to get mail-in ballots to where they're going. Okay. When you do that, then you've got to provide to the United States Postal Service a list of all the eligible voters in your state. And then USPS has to take that list, and if there's a ballot from someone who's not on that list, then they can't do it. They don't do anything with it. They don't send it to the elections office. USPS, I'm sorry. You think that USPS, President Trump, is going to be able to carry out something that complex? You might say it doesn't sound complex, but I heard from a guy the other day who said he sent a letter via USPS and it took 4 weeks to go like 100 miles. So all of this sounds very complicated and is relying on the cooperation of the states. And our state isn't going to cooperate with any of that. Steve Hobbs put out a statement today about it, saying the president has no authority over elections. The United States Constitution grants that authority exclusively to states and Congress. This latest federal executive order does nothing to improve that and would jeopardize citizens' lawful right to vote. He goes on to say voting fraud is incredibly rare. There have been just 15 cases of non-citizens voting in Washington between 1982 and 2025. He says that's 0.00006% of ballots cast. He said when issues do occur, our system is designed to identify and resolve them swiftly. So first of all, I like Steve Hobbs, disagree with the interpretation and the math there. We've had him on the show before. Washington State is a I promise I'm legal to vote state, where you just get your driver's license, motor voter, you check a box that says, yep, I want to be registered as a voter, and that's it. Just your promise that you're legally allowed to vote. So when he says that since 1982, there's only been 15 cases of non-citizens voting, they don't know that. They don't know that because their lists aren't comprehensive in that sense. And in Washington State, we treat people basically as citizens of our state with our sanctuary policies. And the only time you're going to catch someone or be able to add them to that lumber is if they're caught, like if someone reports them and then you investigate it and you find that there was a case of voter fraud. So I'm sorry, Steve Hobbs, but you don't know that there's only been truly 15 cases of non-citizens voting in Washington state. Those are the ones you caught, essentially. This is the thing that bothers me so much. What's the problem? If the federal government and the Social Security Administration want to give you a comprehensive list of citizens living in your state that are eligible to vote, and you can use that to ensure that there is so that fraud is that rare, then why would you not do it? Because again, you're saying that fraud is that rare. 0.000006% of ballots cast are illegals. Then you should be happy to just use it to check the list and you would find that it's very rare. So doth protest too much. If they're willing to provide it, you should be willing to use it. Nick Brown, the Attorney General of the state of Washington, and again, they're just going to sue. This is going to wind up in court. He said it's no surprise that the same man that claims he won the 2020 election and advances nonsense conspiracy theories now wants total control over elections. But he has no authority here, a fact already reaffirmed by the courts in this administration's ongoing attacks on the right to vote. He said in January, we successfully overturned a previous executive order by the president attempting to usurp the role of the states and Congress in elections. The law is on our side. There is nothing to support the election denier in chief's voter fraud claims, and we are once again prepared to defend Washingtonians' rights. Spare me the election denier stuff, because whenever Trump wins, Democrats deny that he won. And they're all like, we're going to stop him from stealing the election again. I remember who that we played that clip from the other day. It's like, okay, no kings. He was duly elected, you know? It's not like he stole the election. So they'll sue over it. And look, I tend to agree that the law is probably on their side. I also worry about the implementation, given the state of the United States Postal Service. How do you keep all these lists up to date? Are you sure they're going to be complete lists? How do you account for people who move between states? I think there's a lot of problems with it. But the idea is, the concept is legitimate. Like, look, none of us should want illegals voting in our election. And if you're a state that's claiming that it's very, very rare and it doesn't happen there, then you should be more than happy to go through whatever sort of double-checking process that the federal government wants. And as I've said to Steve Hobbs, and he has no good answer for this when I ask him, how can you ensure that illegals aren't voting when all you require is a pinky promise? You can't. And his answer will be, well, there's serious penalties for voting if you're not allowed to. Yeah, if you get caught. And it's not like they're out there double checking all of these things. So it just bothers me that it's like this pushback against something that most Americans want. Most Americans don't want illegals voting in the election. They want voter ID. And they want to make sure that their vote isn't being canceled out by someone whose vote shouldn't even count. So it's just all, it's politics. And you know, you act like you don't have these problems. We get sent stuff all the time. We get sent, especially around elections, people who are like, I got two ballots in the mail. I got a ballot for a family member who's been dead for 12 years. I personally got a ballot for a family member that used to live with me a decade ago, moved to another state and registered there. So this sort of stuff is happening, and I call those opportunities for fraud. So they want to focus on fraud. I think we should be focused on opportunities for fraud and reducing opportunities for fraud, which is, hey, you know, we got 100 ballots that wound up at a apartment complex that people weren't filling out and they're all just sitting there. Opportunities for fraud. And we got this email from a guy, a former Washington resident. We just got this a couple days ago. He reached out because he's still getting ballots in the mail. He hasn't lived in Washington, you guys, for 26 years. 26 years. Since before 9/11, this guy hasn't lived in Washington state. He's still getting ballots, but he's an honest man, so he's never used them, but he's still getting ballots. And then he sent us this picture. He just got democracy vouchers from the city of Seattle, which is like a taxpayer funded program that allows you to, like, quote unquote, give money to candidates you like. So he could fill out the democracy vouchers from Georgia, where he's lived for 26 years, and influence Seattle elections, even though he doesn't even live here. And he was also saying he got he was getting a ballot for a sister who passed away. So it's just absolutely insane. So we got a response from King County Elections because we reached out about this. Like, man, for as rare as this is, how many times do we have to reach out to King County Elections about people getting ballots that they shouldn't get, or ballots for loved ones who don't live here or are dead? So this is what they said of the democracy voucher thing. Thanks for reaching out. Did a little research, and I appreciate them getting back to us, by the way.
They're
so
very good about it.
They are very good. So King County Elections, this is not an indictment of your wonderful communications people who are very good at getting back to us, and we appreciate it. They said, thanks for reaching out. Did a little research, and our records show that he has long been registered at a residential address in Seattle. His record indicates he updated his mailing address to Georgia many years ago as well. Well, that's the... Okay.
You would think that's enough.
You would think that's enough. It says, in Washington, you can choose any mailing address to receive your ballot and should update your mailing address if you are living or working out of state for
if
all kinds of reasons.
Living.
He did, though.
Yes, I know.
He did.
Yes, but she realizes that, okay, you change your address because you've moved, so you're living somewhere else, but that's what he did.
It says, that said, voters who move out of state permanently should cancel their registration in the state they're moving from. There should be a safeguard in place in case they don't. How many of us, if I moved out of state, would think, oh, I better cancel my voter registration? No, I'd re-register in another state, and that there should be, by now, in 2026, there should be a system in place by which to make sure that that cancels your voter registration when you leave the state. It says, here in King County, it takes a simple form that can be mailed or emailed back to us. We encourage him to take a few moments to fill it out, sign it, and return it. It can be found here. So, and then this is Nicole's follow-up question. Given he has not filled out one of these for over 25 years, is there ever a point where an account would be flagged, either as a possible permanent relocation or a wrong address? That seems to indicate he no longer lives here. If nothing else, it seems like a waste. And that's a good point. It's like, okay, it's been 25 years, though. Mm-hmm. Aren't you then inactive, or it flags something and creates something? They said, regarding his registration, our records show that he has not voted since 1998. Yeah, okay.
Like, which, I mean, it's good that at least wonder? There's no fraud.
Right, says they're, right, so we've never used them. There are a number of situations that would cause us to inactivate his registration. For example, if we got a change of address notification from the post office today, we would inactivate his voter registration and cancel it after two federal elections. That said, his change, so remember, he changed his mailing address to Georgia, hasn't voted here since 1998. They said his change was made 25 plus years ago, before something called the Electronic Registration Information Center started, and before HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, was passed. They said a lot of tools have come on board since he changed his address way back 26 years ago, that we now have this cross-state information sharing. They said what would be best for him is to cancel his voter registration with Washington State. So what they're admitting there is that if you moved a long time ago and didn't, like, fill out a form and send it into elections in, like, the 90s, or in his case, I think in 2000 or 1998, then, yeah, you're probably still getting ballots. That's not going to be a small number of people. And each and every one of those amounts to opportunities to commit fraud. Now, this is a very honest man who would never do that, of course, and as they confirm, has not indeed voted in one of our elections since 1998, despite continuing to get ballots. But that doesn't mean everybody's going to be honest. And the democracy vouchers, you might think, oh, living in Georgia, oh, let me give a democracy vouchers to the non-socialist candidate in Seattle, try to help them out a little bit. This is what we're talking about. There are a lot of opportunities for fraud in our election system. Doesn't mean that people are always taking advantage of it, but it is common sense to close those loopholes and to eliminate as many opportunities for fraud as possible. So here's an idea. Let's work with the federal government to do that. Let's all work together and say only legal voters should be able to vote, and they should only be able to vote once. And what can we do as a team between the states and the federal government to make that happen? In a functioning society, that's what we would do. But no, everything is driven by political animus. Speaking of voting in Washington State, you have another chance at signing a voter ID initiative. We'll discuss it coming up next with the head of the Washington State Republican Party. A lot to get to on the show today. First, if you are trying to save some money as a family, $6 per gallon gasoline just is really making times tough. Totally understand that. Reach out to our friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com. And I mean, you have to have insurance, right? That's just a fact of life, unless you're a horrible citizen and you're driving around uninsured, which I know none of you are. You got to have insurance. And so why not make sure you have the right insurance and then the right insurance at the right price. We have so many members of the Undivided family who are now members of the First Mark family and are saving thousands of dollars a year. Debbie S. says First Mark is the absolute best. We're 70 years old, would rather gouge out our eyes than shop insurance companies for our cars, our boat, our house, our ATVs. One-stop shopping with First Mark, excellent rates and coverage. Anytime we've had a question or had to make a change, it was addressed and dealt with immediately. So comforting having them in our corner. I highly recommend it. Yeah, and I honestly, since I started with First Mark, what has it been, 3 years ago, maybe? I haven't had to think about my insurance at all. They're constantly checking in. And if I have something to update, I'll send it over to them. They make it so easy. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So join the First Mark family today. All right, another attempt at getting voter ID passed in Washington state. You'll remember in 2025, there was an effort to collect enough signatures to send voter ID to the ballot. They fell short despite having help from Scott Pressler, who came into town. So they're trying it again. Now the initiative is IP26-500, and it would require proof of citizenship for voting. So this is being spearheaded by the Washington State Republican Party. So Jim Walsh, the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party, nice enough to come on the show with us today, discuss this initiative and also some other big news that happened this week. Jim Walsh, welcome back to Undivided.
It's good to talk to you, Brandy. It's been a very busy couple of weeks in Olympia in Washington.
Yeah, I like that sign you got there. Although I think that the AI made Bob a little too handsome.
You know, I've noticed that before, too. Not just in this version, but in some of the cartoons they have of him burning the state constitution. He looks too good. He looks kind of robust. It gives him a good chin.
I was going to say, too strong of a jaw.
Strong line, you know. Yeah, oh, well.
Let's redo that. We'll redo those, you know. We'll get you new signs. All right. First, you know, your reaction to the governor officially signing the income tax into law.
Well, I mean, he dragged it out as long as he could because he wants to muddle any effort with a referendum or an initiative to repeal it. And so he's burning days. You know, he's not strategically smart, but he's tactically smart. I think this is the kind of chess player I think he is. He's kind of a grinder. He's not like a brilliant, elegant chess player. He'll beat you in 40 moves by grinding you down. And I think that's how he is as a governor. He's kind of a grinder. He's not really elegant. I mean, it would have been more elegant, perhaps, to ride it all the way out. But I think he triangulated and split the difference.
Yeah. So there's obviously going to be a bunch of simultaneous efforts to try to undo the income tax, the referendum play, the initiative play, the legal play with Rob McKenna and the Citizen Action Defense Fund. From your perspective, which of those do you believe has the best chance of getting the desired result?
I think the referendum and or initiative path is the most interesting to me because it's quicker. I mean, we can get it moving quicker. The thing about the lawsuits, even if there's one or if there are a couple, is the courts can set the schedule there. And it may be, even if McKenna and his group or another group, if they get in or whatever, if they make even their strong cases, and I believe McKenna's the right guy to make this argument, by the way, it could take a couple of years. I mean, it could take a while just to grind through the process there. So I like the initiative referendum path better because I think we can get people activated, get the petitions out sooner. It's not as soon as I'd like, but sooner. And I think it would be, I also think it's more engaging and activating of people. They have a role to play in either a referendum or an initiative. And I think that activates people.
Well, and one thing that neither of us brought up is the fact that there are also a lot of vacancies on the state Supreme Court. And, you know, these are traditionally races that I think the populace they're not as like sexy or well-known, but I don't know that there will be more important things on the ballot in November than the state Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, so true. Total of 9 judges on the state Supreme Court. 5 of those positions, a majority, are moving in some form. Either the current judge is resigning soon or the positions come up for election as they normally do on a staggered basis this November. We could do more. to swing the state Supreme Court to a middle ground position if we can seize even a couple of those openings. And that would be an electoral issue. That would be an election this fall. But if we could pick up even three out of the five, that would change the direction of the state Supreme Court. I mean, to be honest, right now, it's kind of stacked and it's acting as a rubber stamp of the executive branch. And that's a constitutional problem in itself.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't even have to be conservative judges. I mean, people who respect the Constitution would be great. Like, let's just start there. I mean, just respect the Constitution.
Textualists.
I think the takeaway is a lot's going to be on the ballot in November. I mean, this is a significant midterms and then everything we have going on here. So potentially we could have, my understanding is, four initiatives on the ballot in November. So protecting girls' sports, restoring parental rights, repealing the income
tax.
They're
already there.
And then you guys are going to try once again for the voter ID initiative, correct?
That's correct.
So
that's IP 26500, and it is almost exactly the same as the initiative we tried last year. It's a little different. I talked to a couple of county auditors and election people, and they had some very technical suggestions to make and changing some of the language, and which we accommodated. We did, but it is the state's version of the federal SAVE Act. Okay. It is structurally similar to that, not verbatim the same, but it's our system's version of what that bill is trying to do at the federal level back in DC. And the critical part of the SAVE Act, and really the only part, the main part of the initiative here in Washington, is that voter ID piece. It's requiring proof of citizenship, proof of ID. In our case, it's when you register to vote, not when you vote. It doesn't, and it doesn't touch vote by mail. There's a lot of misinformation out there. It leaves vote by mail in place. It leaves the voting process in place, but it does change the registration part so that you have to, you don't just say you're a citizen, which is what the current system does. You have to actually show with some kind of documentation that you are a citizen and a legal voter. That's what the initiative does. And that lines up with the Federal SAVE Act. The Federal SAVE Act does more than that, but the critical piece of the Federal SAVE Act is the same. It's a ID, a proof of citizenship or proof of ID element that's the key part of it.
So how short did you fall last year on the ID?
We got about halfway to the 300 and change thousand we needed. We got in a little more than halfway, but we say halfway. So we got an earlier, more coordinated start this year. We filed it early last year, but we didn't really get the signature gathering element up and running till later in the cycle. This year we got it up and running in a more coordinated way sooner. And the early returns are already stronger, and we'll see. We'll hope that holds out over the cycle. The signatures are due, the petitions are due to qualify it by the end of June, first couple days of July. So there's still some months left, and we're hoping that the stronger start and some clearer organizational stuff will help us get there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Let's Go Washington really has the initiative thing down, but this is being run by the state Republican Party, so separate. They don't really have the infrastructure around initiatives built up to that extent, but that doesn't mean it's not possible. I mean, they've done it before. So they're going to try the voter ID thing again. So if you signed the last one, this is a new one, so you can sign this one. You're not like signing twice or anything like that. So I think that's important to know. So that is being run through the state Republican Party. You can check out more and get information on where to sign on their website. All right. Governor Bob Ferguson just signed that bill allowing unelected bureaucrats to kick elected sheriffs out of office. But something he said about it at the bill signing is quite interesting. We'll discuss. First, happening tomorrow, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwer Capital is having one of his Know Your Risk live webinars. This will be the Cutting Through the Market Noise live webinar. Of course, Iran is going to be a big point of conversation. I'm sure he'll get a lot of questions about that, what's happening with oil prices, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's ready to answer all of those questions. And then he's also going to talk a little bit about AI, crypto, and tech, what's happening in those areas and how it could impact your retirement portfolio. So we'll have a full schedule during the webinar happening tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can sign up for free, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. He'll also, of course, go over how Bulwer Capital is always focused on the fundamental fundamentals of value investing, totally focused on risk management, looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. That was my best Valley Girl impression. Unbelievable with the vocal fry. Okay, so of course, one of the worst bills to come out of the legislative session in Olympia should scare the hell out of all of us was Senate Bill 5974. And this was Democrats saying, hey, we don't like who citizens are electing for sheriff in a couple jurisdictions, and we want to be able to kick him out of office. The party that says that Trump is a threat to democracy, coming up with ways, manufacturing ways to change the will of voters. So that bill, despite a lot of protesting over it, was signed into law this morning by Governor Bob Ferguson. Here's that moment.
Sheriffs and police chiefs should be held to the same standards as their own officers and deputies. Senate Bill 5974 modernizes Washington law governing sheriffs, police chiefs, and town marshals by setting these minimum qualifications. Under this bill, sheriffs and police chiefs who are decertified are removed from office. I do have some reservations about the process for creating a vacancy. I've had good conversations with the sponsor and other legislators as well about that, and we'll probably be doing a little work on the interim, but the main message today is this is a great bill.
No, it's not a great bill, and especially if you say you have some reservations about it. Why would you sign a bill into law that you have any reservations about? Oh, implementation, I'm not sure how, it doesn't matter, great bill. Isn't that crazy? I would never sign a bill, a law. I would never sign something into law that I had even slight reservations about. But there are a ton of questions about this. Okay, let's say you decertify someone in the middle of an election, and the other person wins, then it turns out that person takes you to court and they win. I mean, you can't redo the election. And just the idea when he says in there they should be held to the same standard as their deputies. Okay, but you're putting new standards on them that you're not held to as the governor. You didn't have to take a lie detector test to become the governor, where you take the same oath to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the state of Washington. So you're putting new restrictions on him. Can we put the same restrictions on you and oust you from office? No. So let's not talk about equal standards. But again, this is an unelected board of bureaucrats who could decide that they don't like something that a sheriff said. I mean, this is sort of like the Adam Fortney, Keith Swank bill. They didn't like the former sheriff of Snohomish County. These efforts, I mean, they tried to remove him from office, weren't able to do it. They were at the ballot box, but they weren't able to get him recalled. And he's running now again for office. You don't think they're going to use this law against Adam Fortney when he wins? Same thing. This is really about Pierce County Sheriff Keith Swank. They don't like the things he says. They think he has happy tweeter fingers. They don't like the things he tweets about transgender people or whatever it is. So they're going to, how long do you think it's going to take before they try to remove the duly elected sheriff of Pierce County from his job? Which I don't care how you feel about Keith Swank. I wouldn't have voted for him. I would have voted for Patty Jackson. But that doesn't mean that the will of the voters doesn't matter. And that doesn't mean that I won't fight just as hard to make sure that he stays in office. Absolutely insane. So Keith Swank put out a response. He's holding an event to try to raise money to sue over this. He's holding an event, SOS Save Our Sheriff. Says, you stood with me in 2024. He put this out just after the bill was signed. You stood with me in 2024, and I have stood up for you, especially in 2026, when democracy has been under assault. And right now, I need you again. The Washington State Legislature just passed Senate Bill 5974 and handed unelected bureaucrats the power to throw out your vote and decertify any sheriff they don't like, including me. He calls it a direct attack on the democratic process and the Constitution, which it is. He said, I will be leading the fight to strike it down, and we're asking you to join us shoulder to shoulder and to stand up in this fight for our Constitution. So they're having an event coming up, and maybe we'll post some, share some posts, but if you go to his social media pages, you can learn about how to, you know, attend one of these events and maybe help in other ways, because it's not just about Keith Swank. It's not just, and I think he has ticket links available on his X, you said? Yeah, so he's got that on his X account. It's not just about Keith Swank. It has nothing to do with how I feel about Keith Swank or any other sheriff in the state of Washington. It has to do with the will of voters and protecting the democratic process that put him in office and puts other sheriffs in office. We don't need any other puppets in law enforcement. Sheriffs are like the final frontier for actually being able to elect them and for voters to choose who is going to lead their public safety. what's happening should be criminal. I think it's illegal. I agree. And there's obviously going to be a lawsuit about it. But what's the standard by which you would decertify a sheriff? I really think it's going to come down to them engaged in free speech that this unelected board doesn't like. That's some terrifying stuff. And where does it stop? Where does it stop? And for Bob Ferguson to sign it into law, despite having reservations about how it's even going to work, just shows you that Bob's a puppet too. They're all puppets. So all I promised, I'll stand with Keith Swank, and I'll stand with him now as we fight back against this bad bill. All right, a little bit of national news. So President Trump is addressing the nation tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific time. I always love a good Trump speech. It's the first president where I ever just wanted to get my popcorn out and just watch it. Obviously, a lot of implications for what he says. I think he has a lot of, it's about Iran. I think he has a lot of convincing to do, even among members of his own party and Trump loyalists who don't like that this has stretched on for as long as it has. Certainly don't like the gas prices. Tomorrow, remind me, I'm going to redo the poll I did at the beginning of the war in Iran about gas prices. Like, does it change your mind if gas prices do go too high about whether you support it? Because now we're in it for a couple weeks, and I have to believe that some of the answers might have changed, because, man, that hurts at the pump. So he's got a lot of convincing to do when he speaks to the nation. Meanwhile, Iran is threatening to strike U.S.-owned infrastructure in the Middle East, specifically involving infrastructure run by tech companies. So it says, in a statement released by the government-backed news agency, the IRGC said retaliatory attacks could begin as early as Wednesday evening, so tonight, and advised employees and residents living within a one-kilometer radius of the U.S.-owned facilities to evacuate the area. They listed 18 companies that they're threatening to target for, quote, actively participating in terror plots, which is crazy. According to a translation of the statement, the companies include Cisco, HP, Intel, Oracle, Microsoft, Apple, Google, Meta, IBM, Dell, Tesla, Boeing, among others, NVIDIA, Palantir. So they're threatening to strike this infrastructure owned by U.S. tech companies. And so President Trump was asked about these threats and whether Iran will make good on it. Here's what he said.
What are they threatening them with? PP guns? Or
well, that's what?
They don't have much left to threaten.
My question for you is, are you...
I don't know. I mean, what are they... You made a statement. What are they threatening them with? I don't know. Tell me, how did they threaten them?
Well, all I know is that they threatened them, sir.
What does that mean?
Fair enough.
They said something nasty?
Is the government in touch with these companies? Are you helping to backstop them?
You don't even know what the threat was. What was the threat? I haven't heard it. What was the threat? Did they say they're going to blow them up? They're going to hit them. They're not. You know what they're not going to do? They're not going to hit them with a nuclear weapon.
Yeah. He said, what do they threaten to shoot them with, BB guns? I don't know. But I think it's a legitimate thing to ask the president. But the reporter clearly wasn't up to date on exactly. I don't think the threat was very specific. I mean, specific in the sense that they named specific targets and said you should evacuate if you're within 1 kilometer. But I think what the president was saying is, how exactly do they plan to do that? Because he's a test. He thinks that they've disabled their military capability so much that they wouldn't be able to carry something like that out. So we'll see. We'll see what the president has to say tonight. But I will say, I'm getting antsy. I trust the president. I think on foreign policy, he has earned our trust. But I'm getting a little antsy. The gas prices are making me uneasy.
Marco Rubio keeps making statements, though, that keep me in the okay, this is going to be good camp.
Okay. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe Marco Rubio should give the speech tonight.
He probably
but it might
should.
Actually be better. All right, we have to talk about this. What on earth is happening with Kristi Noem's husband? Oh my gosh.
I don't know.
So the pictures are nuts. I love that Nicole blurred them. I love that you put a black box over the fake nipples. So apparently, Brian Noem, Kristi Noem's husband, did I say wife? Kristi Noem's husband. Maybe I said wife because of the fake boobs. Secret double life of Kristi Noem's cross-dressing husband, Brian, the pouting busty bimbo photos and trove of explicit messages. So apparently he was part of some fetish site where the fetish is like busty cross-dressing character type stuff. And there's all these images of him with these like gigantic knockers that I wish you hadn't to kind of blurred it, because what's with the nipples on them? One's down, one's up. There's like, I was like, you gotta check that out, man. Maybe he was just trying to be realistic, because I guess, you know, not everybody's nipples are perfect. So here's the thing that's about this, like, because Kristi Noem had that thing with
her advisor,
Trump's advisor. Mm-hmm. Why can't I think of his name right now? You'll Google it for me. So she like cheated on her husband, and now maybe it's like, well, because my husband is a cross-dresser, weird. I don't know.
Corey Lewandowski.
So the New York Times did this interesting article where they went to South Dakota and they like showed South Dakota voters and ranchers like these pictures and like asked what they thought about it. It says, in South Dakota, neighbors feel sorry for Kristi Noem's husband. In the tiny town of Castlewood, South Dakota, where everyone knows the Noems, the prevailing sense was that people can't help but feel bad for Brian Noem after a tabloid photo leak. Just the article is so interesting. It says, that couldn't be him, could it? The cartoonishly large breasts, the pink spandex, the come-hither stare. Must be AI, a burly cattle rancher named Kevin said, in, as he inspected pictures of his neighbor, Brian Noem. And I can talk like this because I'm from near Fargo, North Dakota, so I'm not making fun of him, you know. That had been published by the Daily Mail on Tuesday morning. The rancher was playing pinochle in the back of a convenience store with five other men in the tiny town of Castlewood, not far from the Noem family farm. In response to multiple requests for an interview, Mr. Noem wrote in a text message on Tuesday, I will at some point. Today is not the day. I appreciate your heart. And Kristi Noem hasn't really commented other than to say it's been a tough time for her family. But also I saw the president said something about it that was just like, oh, that's unfortunate. Now, I have to wonder, I have a theory. I wonder if that had something to do with why he got rid of Kristi Noem. So I was seeing all these posts from like reporters who are very well politically connected in the Beltway. And they were saying that they too had been sent these images, but they weren't able to authenticate them. So they never went with the story. And they weren't able, I think it was leaked by somebody else who was in this fetish community, who's apparently an illegal alien and wanted to like get back at the Trump administration. So they were trying to leak these images, but the Daily Mail went with it and other reporters had been hearing and had the images, but couldn't authenticate them. So, I mean, I guarantee Trump knew it was coming too. Because if other reporters in these circles were getting these pictures, you don't think Trump was wise to him? I have to wonder if that had something to do with why he got rid of Kristi Noem.
His quote here is, they confirmed it, right? So they confirmed it. Wow. Well, I feel really bad for the family. And if that's the case, that's too bad. I haven't seen anything. I don't know anything about it. That's too bad. And I just know nothing about it.
Okay. Well, maybe he just
knew nothing.
I know nothing about it. But it is, it's odd. It's odd, I gotta say. It is a strange situation.
I think what's changed, because I think everybody, I don't think that just in the last, you know, 20 years, people started having kinky thoughts or like having inappropriate thoughts or having, you know, bad ideas cross through their brain. But
pervy stuff. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But it's different that people act on it these days and have no sense of repercussions and how that could affect not just you, but your family, but the
more readily accessible. I mean, now every kink and fetish has its own little community online, and you can find people who have the same kinks and fetishes as you. And so you're on the depths of the internet, and maybe you think that nobody who's on a kink and fetish website like that will tell on you because they also have the kink and fetish. Sorry, I got to sneeze.
Who in the world told somebody that that wasn't going to come out? Because I don't know. I don't know why you would think that people aren't going to out it, because they always get outed. I mean, I assume most of them get outed. But I think it goes further than this. We were talking about some other allegations, like all of the school allegations that are happening where people are having inappropriate relationships with kids. I mean, I get it. Kids are full of hormones. Like, I don't blame the kids because obviously nobody blames the kids. But that's always been a thing. You always have a crush on your coach or your teacher or whatever. You didn't have any crushes on your coaches?
Well, we didn't have any good-looking ones.
We had a couple good-looking ones.
Okay.
Anyway.
Wow, cool.
And substitute t-shirts. Okay. Anyway, but
we know what kink and fetish websites Nicole's on.
Nobody ever acted on it. That wasn't a thing. People knew there are repercussions to your actions, but I think we've normalized this, like, weird nature of existence, and we just, like, people don't care anymore.
What is the fetish exactly? Like, it's a busty bimbo, and it was, like, caricatures of, like, women. Like, what is doing it for you with that?
Obviously, he's a boob guy.
Boob guy. Not but why does guy. He have to wear it? What is the fetish of him wearing it?
Well, I think it's with then the you're spandex. Not breaking any laws, right?
And are those Christie's spandex?
I don't know. Let's move on.
You have a very nice looking wife. What's the deal? But and I guess she's having an affair.
Yeah.
I think this was going on way before the affair. So I'm guessing their marriage hasn't been on great ground for a while.
Yeah, he's experimenting. All right, we'll get to our daily subscribers show poll next. First, it is spring is upon us. It's April 1st. Spring is April the beginning of spring?
I believe March 21st was.
April showers bring May flowers. Anyway, if you're like me, you probably have a long to-do list for spring. We've got a ton of stuff. Mike's going to continue his unsuccessful, is it a gopher? Is that what's in our backyard? What creates the mounds?
A mole.
A mole, yes. In Minnesota, we had gophers.
Yeah, we don't have gophers.
But here, they're a mole.
Maybe over on the east side.
Mike has been hunting these moles for years. Listen, babe, I love you. You're never going to get them, okay? You're never going to get them.
You know what you do.
You have tried way too hard for too long.
You'll love this. You get a cat.
I would love to get a cat to hunt the moles. But all I'm saying is other outdoor projects at our home have taken a backseat to this never-ending mole hunt, like cleaning of our exterior of our home. So what are we going to do? We're having Valentine do it. So Mike can focus on hunting the moles, and somebody can clean the dirty, nasty exterior of our house. And it's our friends at Valentine. We've also used them to clean out our gutters, do a roof inspection. Maybe you need a new roof. Maybe the April showers you're worried about got a leak. Have Valentine come out and inspect your roof. 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate. And hey, if they can repair your roof, they're going to do that. They're not going to push you into getting a new roof. But if you do need a new roof, they have flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month. And of course, the Valentine experience is guaranteed with every project. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service. They are the 2025 best roofing company named by the Seattle Times in the Pacific Northwest Awards. So 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate today. All right, our daily subscriber show poll has to do with a case being heard today by SCOTUS that President Trump was going to. Sitting U.S. president has never gone to the U.S. Supreme Court for arguments before. Trump was the first one, and some people are saying, oh, he's trying to intimidate them. But apparently there's a seat in the court reserved for presidents. Presidents just choose not to go. Yeah, so this is about birthright citizenship. The president wants to do away with it. The argument is that that would be unconstitutional. So I asked, do you believe that all children born on U.S. soil should be de facto U.S. citizens? Yes or no? And don't factor in the constitutionality,
like the constitutionality
of it.
Right.
Just
right.
Do you think if we were writing the Constitution all over again, that you would allow that?
Mm-hmm. I don't really like that rule.
I don't either.
So I'm going to say no, because I think, you know, if your parents went through the process of being some like dual citizenship or something like that, and then you're born here and you can have both. I'm for that. Dual citizenship, things like
Wasn't
that.
Wasn't it intended for like slaves, right? Like so that, I think that's what it was kind of born out of, is to protect the children of slaves who were brought here from somewhere else.
But I think it's been used as an incentive for coming here illegally, so.
I tend to agree. I think given how we know it's been used, does it make a lot of sense? I don't think it does. Now, that doesn't mean that what he's doing is constitutional. I said from the very beginning that I disagree with the constitutionality of it, and we have to follow our Constitution. It's our North Star as a nation. But no, I guess I don't believe, and 89% of you agree that you say no. You don't believe that all children born in the U.S. should be given birthright citizenship. Zeppi says no, no, and hell no. Robert says no, but as Richard said, this is an issue with a lot of complexities, but as we know now, we are an outlier among nations, because other countries don't do this sort of thing. There are other countries that do it, but not every one of them. Let's see. So Richard said, I watched the Supreme Court hearing today. It's a very complex issue. HTA, I don't think it should be automatic. Birth tourism, just so you come here to get citizenship, or other fraud just to get citizenship, should be able to be challenged. Yeah, and there is like birth tourism, where it's like, oh, I'm almost pregnant. I'm going to get over there and drop this baby so I can, you know, give my child a better life, but maybe also get a better life as a result. I do think that that's a recipe for disaster. Kathy, children born to non-citizens that come to the U.S. legally or illegally should not be given citizenship. The original intent of the Constitution addressed citizenship for the children born to slaves in the U.S. who were kidnapped from other countries and forcibly brought to the U.S. without their consent. Yeah, so I would say this is like a lot of amendments to the Constitution and protections. Times have changed. For the most part, it's really withstood the test of time fairly well, but this argument is made all the time on the Second Amendment. you know, which is like, does it really apply to all of these modern weapons? And look, I've said that's why you can change it. They made it a document you can change for a reason, because they knew that times would change, but they made it very hard to change it, as they should. So if you don't like birthright citizenship, try to change it via a constitutional amendment. All right, comments from the live stream, a couple super chats I'll get to. Big Princess, proud of these brave young women, much respect to our fearless female athletes. Moon Goddess, I pray these two young women seek political positions when they're of age to do so. Both would get my vote every time. So proud of these young ladies. And it's so sad that they can't vote on the initiative to protect girls' sports. We've got to protect them. David Prince, those with a DSD are still male or female and want no part of this. Also, intersex is a misnomer and has been repurposed. The population is from 0.03% to 1.5%. What's a DSD? DSD, I don't know. Differences of sex development. So a sex development disorder. Mm-hmm. Okay. Weiss Castle, I hate to see these kids being dropped into this political quagmire. Yeah, I mean, we're putting them in the middle of an unwinnable situation. Dan Harder, LOL, good luck with that. No way in hell is Chris Reichdahl going to apologize. He might come out with a, I'm sorry this happened, and I'm sorry it upset you. Yeah, right. He's not going to release an apology to Frances Stout. Although you accused a 15-year-old girl, or was she 15 or 16 at the time? Maybe 16. Of, like, spreading hateful words. And she didn't. She just called a man.
Right. And I think that it's a good lesson, though, that you can push and push and maybe, I mean, it's important for these girls to talk to these politicians. It's important the politicians listen to them.
Yes.
And so I think that they are a good lesson in keep fighting. And yeah. I do think it's kind of cool because I think that this issue and the state has changed the trajectory of their lives, maybe, mm-hmm. because neither one of these girls were public speakers. Neither one of them had any desire to, you know, they're not on TikTok doing, like trying to become Insta famous or something like that. They just want to make a difference.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the coolest part, the good that comes out of this.
It's been awesome regardless. Watching them find their voices. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I'm so proud of them. All right, on Trump's EO targeting mail-in voting, Bill, the USPS plan seems intended to stop mail-in votes by, like, I guess making it too difficult or burdensome. I don't know.
They're just bad at delivering.
Well, yeah. Tanya Butterton, what if we register annually when we get our card tabs? Nothing has to stay filed anywhere. Are you talking about registering to vote annually? I don't get that comment.
What if we register annually?
Yeah, because you don't register annually to vote. De pluribus unum. When I die, I hope to vote.
She's saying though is maybe we should register every year.
Oh yeah,
like you do your car tabs.
Yeah. De pluribus unum. When I die, I hope to vote in 5 more presidential elections. Yeah. You got to get somebody to fill out the ballot that's going to continue to come to your house. Let's see. On the new voter ID initiative, Sherry says, my husband is a U.S. green card holder, i.e. a legal citizen. Every time he renews his driver's license, he's asked if he needs assistance registering to vote. He always states that he is not a citizen and is ineligible to vote. What is the likelihood that an illegal alien will state that they are not a citizen when they are asked about registering to vote? Right. That's the problem, is you have to be an honest person in that moment. Mm-hmm. They're relying on honesty. I think most people are honest, but we know that not everyone is. Mm-hmm. And they might not even understand. We don't know the language barrier. They might not really understand what they're being told to sign or not sign or attest to. Let's see, on Bob signing the bill that will allow sheriffs to be kicked out of office, Chuck with his $5 super chat for unbelievable boop. Happy Trump Day. Thank you. Moon Goddess says supporting the boop. I gave a good boop today. I gave a Valley Girl boop. T8858X, that oath to the Constitution is not something Bob understands. Mm-hmm. Definitely doesn't care about it.
You know what I'm thinking? You know what we should do?
What should we do?
We should, you know, if our money is being spent in ridiculous ways, mm-hmm. take some of the, you know, transgender sex
money
from jails
yeah.
and put it into the post office, because that is a depressing place to be. And no wonder they lose so much mail. And I mean, have you looked back there? It's a mess and it's old and they
never
get
updates. Needs to be privatized. It just needs to be privatized.
That would work too, but something needs to happen, because that's why, I mean, it's a depressing place to go.
Yeah, I don't think you need to give more money, because the reality is people, there's more options than there used to be. There's more alternatives to USPS. So it just isn't getting the kind of revenue it used to get in. You got UPS, you got FedEx, you got
new paint job.
Close it down. All right. Let's see. Midnight. King Bob has decreed that the peasants will be denied any and all decisions they make. Yes. It'll just be a suggestion. Mm-hmm. It'll be a vote for who you want to be sheriff, but then the governor will really decide who's sheriff. On Christy Noem's husband, Matt says...
This is pretty good. 2 days in a row, Matt, says, with the good ones.
I guess Christy didn't really know him. Know him? Get it? That's really funny, Matt. That's good really for you. Good. Leland Taylor, $10 super chat. I got a call from Dave Larson this morning, not a robocall or an assistant. We talked for 15 minutes. It's imperative we elect him. Position 5, get out the word. Dave Larson running for Supreme Court Justice. He called you on the actual call, like a telephone call.
You know that's what? So nice. He is a nice guy.
Dave is really a nice guy. I hope that it works out this time for him. All right, Nicole, thank you for the giggles. We'll get to our closing sanity check. First, if you're thinking about fleeing the stage with all the rich people, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes can help you, and he can help you even if you're just moving in state, but you know. I think a lot of people are leaving right now. Wes has been able to help a lot of Undivided viewers and listeners sell their home, including Preston, who said that Wes made him feel like he was his only client.
He works out of East King County, so he deals with multi-million dollar homes. My house is not anywhere near what he sells, but he made it feel like I was one of his biggest clients. I had some really stupid questions, I felt like, and ChatGPT couldn't answer them. So I felt like I was a moron reaching out to Ebby sometimes, and she had a lot of grace with her answers. So just him, the way he puts you at ease, the way he treats you like you're the most important client, and just his whole staff, how helpful they are.
Yeah, I love that he says, oh, my home's not like a multi-million dollar home. That is the cutest house. I mean, I know he sold it, right? The little match and chicken coop. I can't get over the match and chicken coop. Same color as the house. Adorable. Anyway, so I love to hear that Wes Jones is so great with our viewers, as he is with all of his clients. Go to his website, sellwithwes.com. Peruse some of the listings that he's recently helped to sell, what he's been able to do for clients. And then I would start by using their home value calculator right there on the website. It'll tell you how much your home is worth, and then Wes will reach out to do a free market analysis for you. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. So remember Idaho's like, you can't fly unapproved flags anymore, and they were going to institute these fines and fees for cities or jurisdictions that flew unapproved flags. And I think that's really directed at the pride or trans pride flags. So in Boise, they had to take it down.
It's not political, it's not religious, it's not ideological.
For each other will carry us through. Yes, our love for each other will carry us through.
We're here with our courage.
Did they really just fold that like you'd fold an American flag for a fallen service member? That was very dramatic. Here is the mayor crying after they were doing although they couldn't fly the trans pride flag, they did sign a declaration for Trans Day of Visibility, during which she cried.
Today in particular, I know it is a sad day, a tough day for many people that call Boise home. On this Transgender Day of Visibility, the City of Boise affirms our commitment to ensuring that every resident is seen, valued, and supported. And whereas we recognize the courage, resilience, and contributions of individuals across our community who work each day to make Boise a more welcoming, vibrant, and compassionate place.
These people, I can't with
it. To strive to be a community where everyone, including our trans youth, can live openly, safely, and authentically.
I want everyone to feel accepted and safe as well. Doesn't mean they need a special flag to fly over City Hall. Although Matthew Cook had a great comment. I'm surprised Taps wasn't playing. That they weren't playing Taps while they took down the trans pride flag. Oh, Boise, so close, yet so far from Washington State. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. Tad bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers, because that's how we have jobs. So if you'd like to help pay our paychecks, go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. You also get access to participate in our daily subscriber show polls, watch Sundays with subscribers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow for our final live show of the week. Toodaloo.